NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
And that's 1-800-BYDESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence Playoff Edition. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by the beat writers, as always, Jim Thomas and Tom Timmerman. So let's jump right to it, JT. Never ideal to suffer injuries on the blue line, period, but all of a sudden the Blues are facing a bit of a crisis here, and right as the playoffs get rolling. Not a great situation, Jim.
No, actually, strangely similar. The last year, of course, it was early in the playoffs when Bortuzzo and Falk went down, and there wasn't much of a playoff, just four games. But I think the difference this time around is that, you know, I don't think last year we felt like the Blues had any kind of chance in any way to do much in the playoffs. But this year we do, and they add Letty. You have almost, in your top six, almost 4,000 games, just regular season games. If you threw in the playoffs, it'd be like probably 500 more. He had all this experience, and now you've got Mikola, Santini, and Rosen. And I'm fully expecting that third pairing to be Rosen and Santini on Friday night. I mean, I don't want to be too dramatic, but it looked like, and maybe you guys saw more replays than I did, that puck was close to the temple of Bortuzzo. I mean, he's lucky he wasn't hurt more. You know, Letty doesn't look close to playing. Scandella, I saw him out here skating, but Berube said that it's more just to, told us today, Craig Berube, that it's more just to kind of keep him going. So, you know, I think it's Rosen and Santini, and no, it's not Springfield versus Wilkes-Barre Scranton. It's game three of a Stanley Cup playoff series.
Yeah, we may have to assess what this does to Springfield's AHL playoff chances as they they lose that pairing. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, when the Blues at the trade deadline move things, said, well, not going to need Jake Walman anymore because he's the number eight defenseman now, and boy, they, you know, Jake Walman would be a breath of fresh air as well as Rosen has played. You know, it's a situation that the Blues are in. When you're going as deep as Steven Santini, that's a position not to be in.
Yeah, looking at the at game two, I mean, there were times when both my guy Nico, who certainly adds welcome physicality and size, but you know there were moments where he was under duress and not faring well under the forecheck duress, and then I thought Rosen got exposed a few times. And so, which is not surprising, but you're playing a really good forechecking team that's got size and tenacity, and they were obviously focused in game two to come strong. There were anxious times even before the injury to Bortuzzo occurred, and so I don't know where it's gonna be hard to hide these guys given the way Minnesota plays.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And kind of the two moments that stand out is one, I think it was on the fifth goal, the beautiful Kaprizov goal and pass by Zuccarello. I think it was that play. Probably don't need to slide there, Nico. And it was not the best time slide there, trying to break up that 2-on-1. And then the Rosen play, although, you know, the primary culprit is Tarasenko with that turnover, but it looked like Rosen maybe even just started to go down the ice too quick. He had a chance to clear that puck before Eriksson Ek did that deke that made Husso look pretty bad there. So the only thing that might help is that the Blues will get the last change. And so to a degree, maybe he can keep, if it is indeed Rosen and Santini, he can keep them away from, I guess, the Kaprizov line, but you know, the second and third lines are pretty good for Minnesota as well. So you're not going to be able to totally shelter them. The other point I want to make quickly is You know, Scott Perunovich, when we're talking about depth, he would have been a guy that, that without the wrist surgery would have still been kind of working his way in the system. And he's skating now. He was out there skating with Scandella. He's when he had the surgery, March the 15th, they said it was a 2-month reevaluation time. So we're not quite to May 15th. And Berube kind of teased us a day or two ago where he said he might be closer than you think. But then last night and again today, he said, no, he's not ready, meaning, you know, not ready for this series. And you know, Tom and I were talking about this earlier today. Even if he was ready, wouldn't you want him to – I don't think he's played for the Blues since January. Wouldn't you want him to maybe go and – you know, Springfield's about to start their playoffs. Go down there and play a couple games for them before you throw them into the wash here.
I would expect that even if Scandella or Letty rises from, you know, their hospital beds and or the training table and plays, you're going to see a lot of minutes of ice time for Falk and Krug and Parayko and probably Mikkola at that point. I mean, there's going to be some pretty high ice time numbers, I would expect, unless the game is totally out of hand.
Just to touch on Santini a bit, I thought when the few times we saw him earlier since he came to the organization, he seemed okay. He seemed like a guy that you really didn't notice anything untoward with. Seemed like he was able to fit himself in, but it's a long way from being able to be a guy that you don't notice any major problems with to, you know, withstanding heavy incoming forechecking in a really critical scenario, which is what he's going to be faced. Now, I mean, he seemed fine as a fill-in during the regular season back when he got a chance, but man, this is not the time. And oh, by the way, if you win this series, you got Colorado. We saw what happened with them in the game one for the Lanch. So, yeah. Hey, welcome. Hey, glad to have you back in the NHL there, Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen, that number 97, try to keep an eye on him. He is a very no-frills, defensive defenseman. He was leading the Thunderbirds in plus-minus. Lots of penalty kill time. Not afraid at all to step in front of shots, but you know, maybe you might want to check with Robert Bortuzzo on that. But he's a safe player, which means he's usually in position. But you know, when you have the ice capades coming at you, Kaprizov, and should the Blues be fortunate enough to advance to Colorado, that's a whole different animal.
First words from Craig Berube about Santini, I believe the first word was normal, I believe. And then the next ones were good leader. So I'm not sure if that's exactly what the Blues need right now from a defenseman coming in, but normal, I guess they would probably take, because that's better than subnormal,
abnormal.
Yeah. I mean, and let's face it, I mean, it's Steven Santini has spent the season in Springfield for a reason. And, it's going to be a challenge for him because that's how these things work.
Yeah. Where's Delzato when you need him? I think he got let go by the Senators. I think he's free for the taking. So,
I never thought I'd hear those words. God, I wish we had Michael Delzato. Well,
they got Witkowski down there, who they got in the Letty trade. So I guess that is another. If you ask who's next, on
Tyler Tucker's down there.
You know Tucker, who got came up in this when they were in this crisis mode a year ago, and Witkowski has played some NHL games. So who knows.
Yeah, that's the sound of the barrel being scraped by the pro personnel folks. Otherwise, big picture, you would be satisfied with the 1-1 split in Minnesota, and certainly game one, they caught their share of puck luck. Minnesota hitting some drawing some iron with some shots. I thought Minnesota played pretty well for much of the game and got into their game, but obviously the Blues connected on their power play and it killed penalties and again caught some breaks and got the edge and kept it. game two, JT, to me, just is one of those things that hockey happens, you know, an exploding stick, a couple of penalty calls that, you know, you'd say, is this, you really make that call in the playoffs? Minnesota converts. And then really the game, a couple things happen. The fan on the pass by Tarasenko in the game gets away from you before you know it. It just seems like that's hockey.
Yeah, interesting to hear your thoughts there, because Tom and I were talking about this, and we were both kind of in agreement. I came away from that game one, you know, the Blues win by four, and I'm like, man, Minnesota didn't play bad at all. They had a lot of good chances. And to be honest, I came away from last night's game, okay, the Blues, I said, you know, the Blues really didn't play bad. Okay, there was the bad Tarasenko turnover, but you know, the exploding stick, as you – so colorfully called it. I mean, that kind of turned the game, really got the crowd in. And the chief did not like the high stick call at all. And he wasn't shy about telling us about that today. He thought the slash was deserved, but he thought he couldn't believe the high stick call. And yeah, like you say, some nights the hockey gods smile upon you and some nights they don't.
Yeah, it's, you know, you replay that game, you know, Bortuzzo makes that pass and it goes up ice and life, you know, the Wild didn't have a shot on goal up to that point. And, you know, what happened, the Blues have been putting on pressure. What happens from there? But that's the way it works. But, you know, and series are decided on plays like that sometimes. But that was a case where, you know, if you could subtract two seconds of action, Bortuzzo's stick and Tarasenko's pass to Rosen, and remove those, you know, it's a wholly different game. But you can't. They happened, and the Blues lost, and they got to deal with that. So we'll see. By the way, I was just thinking of something. You know, all year long, the Blues have had to go many times. Blues had to go 11-7. Maybe they can go 13-5. You know, only use, you know, suit up Dakota Joshua or something, and only go with 5D.
Do they have a forward who could maybe play a little defense? I don't know.
Well, though, it's like, hey, somebody like Tyler Bozak, you know, you've been in the league a long time. If we just put you back there, could you just pretend to be Tory Krug, you know, just.
Hmm. Yeah.
But when I'm trying to look for positives, like you said, there were good stretches for the Blues in this against Minnesota in game two. And I thought, it's unfortunate we've keep coming back to that one misplay in front of the net by 91, but you know, it was just such, the timing and such was terrible, and they just didn't get away with it. It happened and Minnesota took advantage. But having said that, he came out, he had a scoring chance right away in that game. And there were stretches where, you know, plenty of good touches in the power play. And I thought he and Thomas were fairly busy. And, I'm guessing he's energized by, playing and competing in a sense against a Kirill the Thrill. I liked a lot of what he did except for that one play.
Yeah. And that was one thing. And again, it sounds a little strange coming off a four goal loss, but I thought the Thomas line really perked up. I mean, they had gone three games with only one assist. If you go back to the last two games of the regular season, Tarasenko did not have an attempt. I don't mean a shot on goal, just an attempt, a shot that missed or was blocked in game one. So it was good to see them going. And again, the chief can manipulate to get, you know, maybe some favorable matchups to keep them away from Greenway and company. So that was kind of an encouraging thing to see.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the biggest thing about home ice advantage, or, you know, that the Blues have. And it's not about sleeping in your own beds. It's not about having the fans. It's going to be, you know, that they can, Berube will control the line changes now, and he'll be able to get those guys out in a situation away from that grief line. And that can only help, you know, if they get in that situation.
Those guys are monsters. I mean, I think they could play linebacker. And I mean, those are big hockey players.
Yeah. And I guess if you want to take a moment to give a shout out to the Wild, I think the, Erickson Ek has got to be on the list of most improved players. You know, he came in with expectations that there was an offensive side to his game, and that this year that's come. And he's just a big guy who plays a really good game, which they knew positionally, and he was a strong player, played a strong positional game. Now he's added some offense to that, and they really found something. They've gotten peak performances from multiple guys this year. But man, I tell you what, Joel Eriksson Ek has to be right up there. I mean, I'm thinking we watch guys like Bo Horvat when Vancouver plays well, Sean Couturier when Philly was playing well. Certain guys that really get your attention for their all-around play, and boy, Eriksson Ek, yeah, full marks to him. When you're having to hide from a guy, and I think the Blues were going to try to get away from him. That's high praise.
Yeah. He was extremely impressive in some ways, as impressive or even more impressive as Kaprizov was last night.
It's one of those things that's going to decide this series. If the Blues can get the Thomas line going and they produce, that's going to be a big difference in this series. The Blues need some line to be really cranking out goals at even strength.
In terms of the physicality, JT, certainly Braden Schenn has come to deliver that. I mean, he probably should have been whistled, or definitely should have been whistled for interference on his bowling for a wild hit on Fiala there. That was, but I mean, they need that from him, and the Chief is trying to put him in a position to get that so they can. And I thought overall they matched the physicality of the Wild, and I give Braden Schenn a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, and he got besides Dumba, he got who did he get? Was it Fiala? I think he got Fiala. I kept waiting for him to knock Spurgeon in the next Tuesday because of his remark. It seemed kind of innocent. And then when you listen to it, like, we'll see Spurgeon again on, I guess he said tomorrow was the day before. So I thought, what does Schenn have in store? Now, you don't want to necessarily get in a fight and have to sit in the box, but it's good to see Schenn. It's a shame that Bortuzzo now probably, who knows how much he's going to miss. You miss that. Mikula adds that physicality. So yeah, is Minnesota probably a heavier team, a more physical team than the Blues? Yeah, but the Blues aren't going to back down, and it's not going to take them off their game. I mean, it's a shame that hit, I think it was Matt Boldy, it looked like that was the hit that knocked Nick Leddy out. Probably should have been called for something, but no, the Blues aren't going to back down.
Yeah, I think people in Minnesota have a bad impression of Braden Schenn as a goon or a thug who's going to come after Spurgeon, which he might well do. And he did lead the Blues in fights this season with three. But other than that, he did not have a whole lot of penalty minutes this year for a guy that plays the way he did. I think he might have had 9 minor penalties in the whole season. Not a Lady Bing candidate, but he certainly picks his spots. When it comes to being a physical player.
Going back to game one, it was, of course, power play was a story. But and again, a guy that was engaged in game two as well, just without getting the results. But, David Perron, JT, sort of he lives for this sort of competition. And again, in a series that's going to be edgy going forward, there's going to be some scrums. There's going to be some stuff along the wall. There's going to be some chit chat, so on and so forth. It just seems like David Perron and sent a signal in game one and with his scoring, but just in general, this is a guy that's that really relishes this type of scenario.
Yeah, and we all know the feisty David Perron is the best David Perron, and one of my joys of still the relatively new covering hockey is, you look down away from the puck and there's Perron just doing something with somebody all tangled up. And that's what Perron does. I mean, he's like a Brad Marchand without the licking, and it's really good to see. But also, the thing that amazes me about Perron is just his puck control, how hard it is to get the puck away from him. And it's been even more pronounced in the playoffs and late in the season. He does not want to give up the puck.
The Blues had probably, a year ago, what, 5% chance of beating Colorado in the first round. And then I think when Perron went out, their chances went to like 0%. You know, there was no way a year ago they were going to advance in the playoffs without Perron. The chances weren't great to begin with, but they vanished. This year, I mean, he's going to be one of those guys. You know, Shen is another that if those guys do well, that's going to be the key to this team advancing.
A guy who's not feisty per se, but is also could also be important is a guy we've talked about before going into this the postseason in particular. Could he adapt and could he flourish in this environment? Jordan Kyrou, because he had some stretches here later in the season where he wasn't as effective and certainly made some plays that were not the sort of plays you can make in the postseason. So JT, what the Chief moving things around up front seemed to get, he got some offensive results from Jordan. What's your impression of his adaptation to this type of a game that you have to play in the postseason?
First off, Jeff, what did you think of that pass to Ryan Hartman in game one? Apparently, Hartman, whatever hockey players yell when they want the puck, apparently he's yelling at him. Boom.
Yeah, you got to have voice recognition software, I guess. But
yeah, no, I thought he's getting better. It's all about moving his feet. One of the Chiefs' favorite expressions, but skating. Berube mentioned he would like him. He got that goal last night in front of the net, but he'd like him to go to the net more, and he wants him to be in the middle of the ice more. But that looked more like the Kyrou that Blues fans know and love, the good Jordan Kyrou.
He went from 3 shot attempts in game one to 8 shot attempts in game two. So if there's a message certainly there about shooting more and having more chances. And his ice time went up too by about 2 minutes. So more ice time and he did more with the time that he got out there.
Well, one positive, you know, for stretches of the game, the team was able to, you know, because Krug's playing at a pretty good level, Falk's been playing at a pretty good level, and they've been, when their top guys are out there, they've been able to transition at times against Minnesota and at times being able to attack with some speed and some control. So it hasn't been like where they've been completely bottled up or exasperated. And for stretches, yeah. But there are times where you can see this team getting into their game. And again, that speaks to, you know, Kyrou getting chances, scoring chances.
Well, they kept pushing. I mean, they came out hard and they kept pushing even when it was 4-0. I think they know that they can score against this team. I think they have a pretty good degree of confidence against Fleury. I mean, they've had success against him, and I think they're far from discouraged. So I think that's why coming out of the game, if you're a Blues fan, I don't think you should be discouraged.
No, you know, they needed when they got within two. I mean, they needed a break to go their way, and they didn't get it. You know, they didn't get a power play for delay of game. They didn't get a Tarasenko shot. You know, it was off the post rather than in. So they needed, they needed a break. They didn't get a break. And let me just say right now, because we see it every time, the puck goes over the glass, the referees and linesmen get together and talk and then come to a decision. Why couldn't they spend that time looking at a replay? It would take no more additional time and say, yeah, the puck went over. It would save time. I mean, I don't advocate more replays, but this would be a case where somebody in Toronto could just be looking at it and say, yeah, that's delay a game. And it would take, 10 seconds and they would get it right 95% of the time, rather than, I don't know what the current success rate
this is. This really is bugging Tom, Jeff. He actually, Berube was leaving. He'd left the podium, was walking out of the room, and Tom kind of accosted him to state his case here. And what did Chief's reply said? He said something like, Tom, that's something for the summer to discuss.
Yeah, bring that up at the coaches' meetings over the summer. It's obviously nothing can be done about it now, but
Tom is agitated by this.
Well, and it's a good point, because where I get agitated is the, we used NASA-inspired technology to figure out if somebody was a millimeter offside on a zone entry that occurred 45 seconds before a goal was scored. And, you know, because God forbid, you got to get it right. And understandable on a goal score, I suppose. But at some point, there's a time limit. That's my thing. I think if you don't score on that initial rush, I don't care what happens after that. But obviously the rules in place, that bugs me. So we go to these great extremes. We're taking goals off the board on plays that have on situations that happened long before the goal was scored, after a team has had multiple attempts, chances to clear a puck and failed. But because the initial zone entry some time ago, earlier this evening, there was a zone entry that was a millimeter offside that we can detect by with our NASA inspired technology. We're going to bring everything to a screeching halt and take that off the board. So to the, in a world where that happens, I think I can agree with Tom. So,
Jeff, why are all these penalties being called? I no whistles are being swallowed.
Well, and again, you go into this. I mean, I keep telling people, well, they're going to call fewer penalties as the playoffs go on. And, you know, we're eager for that time to come. I think both sides would be, because I don't think Minnesota was thrilled in the some of the calls in the first game either. But, you know, a guy, you know, give Kirill the thrill credit for selling a high stick that was as poorly sold as the old Baron von Roschke punch take back in the pre-WWE days, where he just threw his head up like, okay, even that's a kind of a move that a jobber, a wrestler that's terrible, that's getting $20 to do a TV taping, throws that type of a fake. And he sold it, and that sold the official, who was like, you know, 60 feet away.
How about the Ryan Hartman on the in game one on Perron along the board? I think Hartman could do summer stock, you know, maybe some Shakespeare, you know, all the way to the point where, oh, he's got to go back to the tunnel. He was in the tunnel for about 3 seconds, and then he turned around and came back. It was almost like a soccer flop where, oh, my God, they're going to have to amputate his leg, and 30 seconds later, he's coming back into the game.
It's that time of year. You have to empty the tool bag. You got to use every skill you have to get through.
And another thing, if you're holding your stick loosely with one arm away from your body in a non-hockey position, and somebody knocks it out of your hand, then that's I'm sorry, but that's another, the whole slashing the stick out of your hand thing is about as dumb as it gets. And and even slashing the stick so it breaks, because these sticks break, you know, when you look at them. So that's another thing. I mean, not that we just want to turn everybody into a meat cleaver out there, because it's the whole idea of slashing penalties is try to keep people's hands attached to their arm. Okay. Because in the old days, there was a real risk that people were going to lose their hand out there.
I kind of thought the same thing, maybe not as colorful as you, Jeff, but Berube, he didn't seem to have a problem with that slash on that.
It's just a part of the game. Everybody knows the rule. It's stupid though, right? Tom, you're with me on that, right? I mean, come on. There's a limit to how much of that I can stomach, especially when the guy's got one hand on the stick and he's reaching back. He's over here, like his dog has veered off to sniff somebody else's pee on the hydrant. And that's your position you've struck with this puck. And then, you should not supposed to knock the stick out of his hand, but still, come on.
The Wild are good at it.
I think it's just a tough call for the refs to make. And so it's almost like the puck goes over the glass. That's delay a game. You knock the stick out of the guy's hand. It's going to be a slash. It's an accepted way the game works.
Yeah, I guess. All right. So enough of the pet peeve. You know, JT, to go back to the to your point about Marc-Andre Fleury, he is not quiet in goal. I guess this is why, to speak to the Blues being confident against him, he is scrambly. He's Jordan Binnington like scrambly out there. Probably stays upright better than Jordan, but man, he is all over the place. And while that is, he's a competitor, he's a Hall of Famer and all that, I got to think that's going to catch up to him. I mean, I admire his athleticism, and he's certainly different that way than Cam Talbot. But there are times like, oh my God, dude, you're leaving yourself so wide open. In this case, game two, they didn't take advantage.
Yeah, and he did leave some rebounds. And Berube said the Blues got a, you know, they didn't have a lot of second and third chances, you know, so you got to get to the the net more. And let's face, he's a Hall of Famer. He's had a tremendous career. He's not the same goalie he was when he took Vegas to the Cup final in 17-18.
you know, it's we've been saying all year, the Blues got to get to the net front, and it's been a challenge for them all year, and it continues. You know, it will probably always be a challenge for however long this season lasts.
All right, last thing on the net front before we let everybody get back to work. The any concern about Ville Husso? I mean, he was a victim of circumstances to a degree, but it's always a bad thing to see a guy get lit up early in his postseason career. It was great to bank a shutout to start his postseason career with some help from the post and the crossbar, but now he gets lit up. He's got to respond to that. JT, any sense of concern with Husso, or at this by now, is it he's not a kid anymore?
Yeah, it sounds weird because I know that the Blues weren't like totally engaged in the Vegas game, but I was more concerned there because I thought I saw two or three soft goals. I don't know. Looking at this game, I didn't really see soft goals. Mentally, though, I think he's strong enough to get by. But again, you know, he could have Rosen, Santini, and Mikula in his top six. So keep that head on a swivel, Billy. Pucks could be coming at you from all angles.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that game two was game two and not game one. If that had been opening night and Minnesota scores six against Husso in game one, then you have to wonder about the guy's confidence. But, you know, he started with the shutout, and that, I think, puts him on a good track going forward. And we'll see where it goes from there. But it's Husso's, you know, series. It's Husso's postseason. You know, if we see Jordan Binnington in a game, it means something has gone, I think, disastrously wrong for the Blues.
Just one of the many things we would not have thought would have been uttered in the net front presence at this time of year, but such the season it has been. Well, JT, for Tom, we appreciate your time. As always, folks, you can catch the Net Front podcast on our website, in various places. And you can catch, of course, with all your favorite podcast app. See all of our videos. We've got tons of videos. We've got tons of stuff on stltoday.com. We've never had more stuff on stltoday.com. That is for sure. So please do subscribe if you don't already so you can take advantage of all the good stuff. For Jim, for Tom, I'm Jeff. Until next time, see ya.